Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Treathart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that prides itself in watching and usually appreciating movies of all sorts. This past week was a particular challenge as we saw three movies that have little in common, some of which some of us have trouble appreciating. First up is writer-director-actor Cooper Rafe's coming-of-age exploration, Cha-Cha Real Smooth. Then we'll shift gears and discuss the Steven Soderbergh thriller, Kimmy, before ending with the what-is-justice drama, The Forgiven. Let's begin this week's show by talking about a movie streaming on Apple TV Plus that shares some similarities with the 1967 film directed by Mike Nichols. Nichols' film, of course, is The Graduate, and the similarity between that film and writer-director Cooper Rafe's Cha-Cha Real Smooth has to do, one, with the fact that Rafe plays Andrew, a recent university graduate who is having trouble figuring out what to do with his life, and two, in the midst of his stumbling around, he develops a thing for an older woman, Dakota Johnson, playing a character named Domino. Otherwise, where The Graduate is one of the great films of the second half of the 20th century, Cha-Cha Real Smooth is, by comparison, a pleasant viewing experience. Largely, that's because of Rafe himself, whose screen presence is likable enough and whose ability to tell a visual story is serviceable, if not spectacular. We watch as Andrew settles for a job at a fast food joint, humorously called Meat Sticks, falls into a sideline gig as a party starter for bat and bar mitzvahs, meets up with Domino and her autistic daughter, Lola, played by Vanessa Burghardt, and goes through a series of family, job, and love challenges before, well, let's just say that this being 2022, Andrew isn't likely to end up sitting grim-faced in the back of a city bus. Give it this much. Cha-Cha Real Smooth may not be a film for the ages, but it's perfectly appropriate for this age, being far more upbeat and less symbolic than what Mike Nichols gave us.
Yeah, I saw this movie, Cha-Cha Real Smooth, at the Seattle Film Festival a few months ago, and Cooper Rafe, as a star, and as you mentioned, he wrote and directed this movie as well, rubbed me the wrong way right from the moment he showed up on screen. The first scene in this movie is him at, you know, one of the last college parties, and he's sort of the center of attention. And then he moves back to his hometown, living in his childhood home with his mother, played by Leslie Mann, and this new guy that she's married, played by Brad Garrett, who does not, they don't get along at all. He does not like this kid. And I don't know.
And it's vice versa.
Yes, yeah. The feeling is mutual. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. There was just something about him where I thought, this is a guy that feels like he was raised on movies like Garden State. And set
I was
out,
thinking yeah, exactly
and set
that.
Out, I'm going to be this generation Zach Braff. And I have to say that Cooper Rafe wrote, directed, and starred in a movie before this whose title I can't say on the radio, but let's say it's S House. you can fill in the expletive there. So I had not seen that when I saw Cha-Cha Real Smooth for the first time. And so I thought, who is this guy? He's just so smug and arrogant. And then the movie started rolling along and the characters took over. And I came to begrudgingly like him, I guess, and kind of understood what he was going for with this character. I have since seen his previous movie, which is kind of like a dorm room take on Before Sunrise. It's about these two people that meet after a party and kind of spend the whole night together. So now I've kind of understood what his intended screen presence is supposed to be. And I think he's probably playing fictionalized versions of himself because Cooper Rafe is also, I think he's like 24 years old and he's already
26
made,
actually.
Okay, well, and he's made two movies already. Right. So he's made these in his early 20s.
And interestingly, Dakota Johnson is 32. So the older woman thing kind of works here.
Well, and the older woman trope, I guess the older woman's getting younger and younger.
She isn't exactly Mrs. Robinson.
Right, exactly. Although I think when they made The Graduate, Anne Bancroft was at like 2 years older than Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah.
So maybe the age gap is more appropriate here. But I have to say that what I like about this guy's movies, the two that he's made and the two that I've seen, is that they're just really warm and human.
Yeah.
I mean, all of the characters in Cha-Cha Real Smooth get a moment of empathy and vulnerability. Even characters that we think we've got pegged.
Exactly.
Like we know the type. For instance, the Dakota Johnson character has this fiance who's absent a lot of the time, which is how she's able to develop this friendship with this younger guy. And when he's in the picture, he's kind of glowering and standoffish because he probably understands what's going on here. And we think we've got him pegged. And then he has a moment where he talks to this kid and, and we realize that we've been completely misinterpreting all of his intentions.
Right. And the same holds true for the Brad Garrett character. Right. I turned to Mary Pat in the screening and said, why is Brad Garrett always stereotypically cast in these roles where he's a jerk? And then in the movie, there's a he has his moment in which you go, oh,
yeah,
okay.
And we also, because this kid, I mean, he is incorrigible in ways that are sometimes off-putting. We sort of understand why he kind of bristles at this kid. So, yeah, I agree with you that this is a modest film. I don't think it's a great movie. It won the, I think, the Audience Award at the Sundance Film Festival. So,
and the grand jury, it was a nominee for the grand jury.
Yeah, so it's obviously kind of in this indie crowd pleaser kind of mold.
Exactly.
But I do think that it has some really nice character moments. And, you know, the relationship between Cooper Rafe and Dakota Johnson also develops in ways you don't quite expect.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I liked this. I agree with you that the charms are modest, but they're charms nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that probably this got a lot of attention at Sundance and places like that because people from the East Coast certainly could relate to the whole like bar bat mitzvah scene that's showcased because, you know, we see that play out in various ways.
Because this is set in New Jersey.
Yeah, within Livingston, New Jersey, supposedly in various ways over time. And so that had a familiar feel to it. Mm. I guess my problem throughout the whole thing was Dakota Johnson and our director star, I couldn't figure out what the age difference was. It bothered me. You know how sometimes you were saying you were turned off initially by the character?
Yeah.
And I was trying to figure out, because she supposedly has a 15-year-old daughter maybe, and you're like, well, how old is she? I mean, she could be her real age, which is 32. Mm-hmm. And then how old is he? And I don't know. That just sort of pulled me off
and
center.
And at one point, they tried to explain that away by her saying, I had her so early. But they never have a specific date. So
was she
15? Was she 17? You know?
And the thing is, I thought that the relationships, as you talked about, the one between the brothers was the one that I found most touching.
Especially the little schism they have. That's exactly what happens in those close type family units in which, you know, people do get along and they love each other and they trust each other when there's a breach of that trust. But then it gets fixed, which is also authentic.
A blip of betrayal.
Yeah right. Well, there's so much about Cha-Cha Real Smooth that is not explained. Like, we're never really explained. Leslie Mann is a terrific actress, and I liked her in this movie, but she was cast as somebody who was manic depressive or depressive, and so we go, is this something that affected Andrew's growing up? I mean, is this why he's such a...
You just get hints of that.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted a little more, but I don't know that a little more would have made the movie any more charming than, to use your word, Nathan. I liked this movie. I didn't love it, but I liked it.
I mean, it kind of has this kind of dog-eyed, I don't know what the right word is, but I mean, it's this guy that is just like trying, he's like a puppy dog. He's trying so hard to kind of get you on his side. And that, I think that can be a little off-putting at first. I want to talk a little bit about his earlier movie, which I mentioned, with the unspeakable title. I don't know, this guy's not great at naming his movies, maybe, but Cha-Cha Real Smooth is an update from a title that has just an expletive.
Or we could just talk about the George Carlin routine.
Oh, that too.
Yes.
Yeah. It is one of the seven words. In that movie, he's a kid who has just started college. He's a freshman, and he feels totally displaced. He doesn't have any friends, even though he does have this kind of outgoing personality. And he has these moments of, again, vulnerability where he's making calls to his mom. And there's this kind of discussion of this grief that happened in their family because his father died when he was younger. And so, you know, he got really close with his mother and his younger sister, and now they're separated. And so he's making these calls to his mom for things where it's like, yeah, I'm feeling kind of sick. What kind of allergy medicine should I buy? It's just an excuse to talk to her, you know. Well, and you get those little moments in that movie.
We know people whose children are like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
right
no, it's
now.
Totally, it's yeah. totally believable. And it's not saying the thing you want to say, so you come up with an excuse for the call. And so I think that this character he's playing in the second movie is almost an extension of that original character. But I think this guy is cockier and a little more self-assured, which kind of goes against the sense of helplessness and waywardness that he's experiencing in his life. And so there's this cognitive dissonance there. You also get the sense that he was probably like the popular nerd in high school, you know, and I think that also comes across in him as a performer. He's this guy that's maybe a little bit of a try-hard, kind of the center of attention. I would like to see him, if he's going to keep directing and writing movies, I would like to see him make something where he is not the star of it, just to see what kind of characters he can write that aren't him.
Yeah. Yeah, let's hope he doesn't become Zach Braff, who basically
flamed out. Hey, he's showing commercials. He's on commercials now.
I know. But, after Garden State was a pretty good beginning, and then, The Last Kiss, and then he really hasn't done, as a filmmaker, much since. So, at any rate, that was our discussion of Cha-Cha Real Smooth. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at Kimmy and The Forgiven. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Subscribe to your favorite public radio programs when you become a Spokane Public Radio sustainer, just like any news or entertainment service you use. But unlike those other services, you decide how much you want to pay. Set up an electronic funds transfer, and monthly installments will be withdrawn automatically from your account. Plus, you can start or stop your subscription anytime you want. As a sustainer, you help make your public radio station strong. You support your favorite programs, and you never have to wonder when to renew. You're part of the community that sustains public radio. Call 509-328-5729 during business hours, or go online to SpokanePublicRadio.org, click the red donate button, and start the process. Working together, we make our community a better place to work, play, and listen.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Cha-Cha Real Smooth. Let's now move to Kimmy and The Forgiven. Let's begin with a story streaming on HBO Max that features an agoraphobic heroine. That heroine isn't the Kimmy of the film's title. No, the agoraphobe is Angela, played by Zoe Kravitz, whose day job has her working remotely in her spacious Seattle loft, correcting the errors of a Siri or Alexa-type virtual assistant technology. One day she hears something disturbing, which she discovers is a woman being threatened and then attacked. But when she reports it to her superiors, she becomes a target herself. Much of the suspense of Kimmy gets lost when we learn early on both who the villain is and what his motives are. But the film was directed by Steven Soderbergh from an original script by veteran screenwriter David Koepp. And even a middling Soderbergh effort, which Kimmy is, rates a view. Besides, in the end, Kravitz's Angela proves to be the smartest person in the room, which is always something worth celebrating, especially for someone terrified of leaving her room.
There's the good news and other news about this particular film, and I think we'll have the opportunity to discuss all aspects of it. First of all, it didn't feel to me like a Soderbergh film, but that's just my take on it. And it also seemed as though it was paying homage to a number of other films, and we'll probably discuss that in more detail. The thing that I liked about Kimmy, I did appreciate Zoe Kravitz's performance, but it really is a film for the pandemic because we're dealing with a woman who's an agoraphobe, and that just felt okay and maybe not unusual given the fact that many of us were tethered to our computers and so forth at home, working from home during this period. She has this amazing loft that must cost $800,000 a minute. And we see her sort of go. I mean, she does play this sort of character that we've seen before. And whether it's on television, it's a woman who may have issues with OCD or who's a tech savant and so forth. And so we've seen this character before. We've also seen the sort of woman in peril theme before too. But Soderbergh does play this out a little differently than some of the other films because it has this Rear Window quality to it.
Yes.
For better or for worse. And I think that we do see her world open up in a way that may not have been possible
for a lot of people during the pandemic because maybe they had curtains. but at any rate, so I don't know. I'm sort of two minds about this particular film because there were things about it I liked and things about it that I was sort of like, huh?
Yeah, well, I mean, Kimmy obviously is Soderbergh film first, but it's also credited to David Koepp, the screenwriter, who is a name you might not recognize, but you have seen one of his movies.
Jurassic Park, yeah.
the original Spider-Man, right. And Panic Room, which this movie also resembles. You mentioned Rear Window, but The Conversation, Blow Up, Blow Out, all of these movies where someone overhears something they're not supposed to, and then it becomes this kind of paranoid thriller. I saw this movie back in February, Kimmy, when it debuted on HBO Max, and I didn't like it then, and I don't like it now. I think that Soderbergh, as a stylist, has a lot going for him here because the shots inside that loft are so beautiful, and then once she finally leaves, you've got this kind of jittery handheld on the ground. They shot this in Seattle during the pandemic, the height of it, and you really get the sense of a time and a place, and I liked all of that. The script, though, and I don't know how old this script is, if this is a David Koepp thing that got dusted off and they added some 2022 plot elements to it, no clue. But this feels like a first draft. This thing is so half-baked. By the second half, she's kind of sneaking around office buildings and being chased by bumbling bad guys. It turns into like a Home Alone kind of thing near the end where she's setting up booby traps. And it all plays out like they thought of this in an afternoon and then shot it. And there's so much potential to this story. You even mentioned the villain when we find out who's behind it. That goes nowhere because he's not a character at all.
That was quirky this part
whole
of
thing
it.
It's a total MacGuffin.
This whole thing is so half thought out. And it's a bummer because there's a lot of style here, and I like Soderbergh, but I agree with you that this is a minor one. I'm surprised critics gave it a pass, but I think they like Soderbergh, and so they gave him the benefit of the doubt.
So what about the fact that it's screening on HBO Max? I mean, should that tell us something?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't necessarily think so because I think more and more good films are coming out on streaming services.
I mean, we talked about one in the first half of the show. So. Yeah,
correct, yeah, and right. You don't have to see this on the big screen.
Yeah,
no, absolutely not. Anyway, that was Kimmy. Let's close with The Forgiven, which we three saw at AMC River Park Square. Here's an idea that likely has occurred to anyone driving along a remote road in the dark of night. What would you do if someone suddenly appeared and you hit them? If you're an arrogant British physician named David Henninger, you drive away. See, he and his wife, Jo, played by Jessica Chastain, were en route to a Moroccan desert hideaway owned by a couple of gay friends who were hosts for a bacchanalia-type party. And while David doesn't try to deny the accident, he certainly doesn't take responsibility for hitting the boy. His name, we are told more than once, is Dries. Until, that is, Dries's father shows up, demanding justice. Writer-director John Michael McDonough, adapting a novel of the same name by Lawrence Osborne, fills his film with a fair amount of obvious social commentary. Rich people are dissolute, poor people are desperate, justice is a joke, but much of it is overkill. Besides the fact that some of the dialogue sounds as if it were written by a third-rate playwright, it would have helped things if someone, anyone in this film, was even the slightest bit likable.
Yeah, I found this pretty frustrating, but sort of fascinating in the ways that it's frustrating, and I can't really get into that without going into spoiler territory. But I will say that The Forgiven is the kind of story that has a lot of moral nuance. Sometimes it's moral nuance in all caps, which maybe isn't nuance at all. But it feels like the kind of story that would work in a novel where you can go into the inner lives and thoughts of the characters.
Or a stage play even.
Well, maybe. But I don't know if it quite works as a film all the way through just because it does become so didactic. I mean, the social commentary is so obvious.
Oh, yeah.
Before the show, we were talking about all the other things that this reminded us of, from Bonfire of the Vanities to A Bigger Splash, which was a remake that also had Ralph Fiennes in it. And McDonough, as a writer-director, he really loves forcing his characters to confront their moral failings, their prejudices, but it's always because of some kind of selfish pursuit. They're never doing it because people around them are hurt by their actions. It's because something happened to them.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden they have to be like, oh, maybe I have to change. And even by the end, you're like, did they really change?
Mm-hmm.
And he's almost daring you to empathize with the Ralph Fiennes character. So I liked all of that. The performances are good. It's beautifully shot. But This is a movie that, even though I was wrapped up in it for maybe a good hour and some change, I felt like once it started tying up plot ends and getting to sort of its central point, my hands kind of closed on air a little bit, and I wasn't totally sure what all the fuss was about. And I mean, it's just another movie about rich white idiots. And I don't know if it's a good one necessarily.
But I think one of the benefits is that it's beautifully shot. And, you know,
it's in Morocco, which is where you wanted to see it.
And the cinematographer is Larry Smith, I want to say, who shot McDonough's other movies before this. He's a good cinematographer.
Right. So it's reminiscent of The Sheltering Sky, The English Patient. And that's what at one point I turned to Dan and I said, well, Ralph Fiennes should be able to handle this because he was already in The English Patient. And
been so there,
he
done that.
He should be able to figure out how to get out of the situation. But yeah, there was just something about it that didn't quite click because it's too heavy-handed at some points and then too vague at others. And I'm not sure that the relationship between Jessica Chastain's character and Ralph Fiennes' character worked exactly. You couldn't get a handle on her, especially after he leaves.
Yeah.
It's
kind of like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, the way that they take off on each other.
And it also, it's clearly condemning these people for coming into this place that isn't their own and infantilizing the culture and talking down to these Arabic people who are waiting on them hand and foot. And the movie's kind of guilty of the same thing.
Yes.
Like, it doesn't give them equal weight. And the relationship between the dead boy's father and Ralph Fiennes, it seems like it's going into complex and dangerous territory. And then it kind of hedges a little bit.
Yeah,
I agree with the vagueness
of
it.
Although I did really like the grieving father.
The best performance in the film.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And the part I'm in about the stage play is so much of the dialogue was stagey. I mean, that's not how real people talk.
Sure.
Which fits well on a stage because you can, you know, with the talents of an actor.
And Martin McDonagh, who is John Michael McDonagh's brother, is a playwright. So maybe he took a pass on the script. Who knows?
Yeah. Anyway, that was The Forgiven. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbend and Murray Pat Truthart and I discussed Cha-Cha Real Smooth and Kimmy. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, remember these words about the power of cinema from the late best-selling author Barbara Cartland. We didn't need sex. We had Tyrone Power. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.